You're listening to Good Timing. I'm your host, Isabel Hagen. Hello, hello. How's it going? Good? I don't know why I ask you that, because you can't answer, but you could answer in your head and pretend that I can hear it. That's weird. Podcasting is weird because, you know, I feel like you have to talk like you're talking to someone right now, but you're not. Like radio, that was normal because it would all be live. So, you know, I knew people were listening. Right now, nobody is listening to this. As I record this, nobody can hear it. So it's really just talking to myself, but that's okay. Are you excited for the holidays coming up? I love the holidays. I'm not religious, but I love Christmas music. I love Christmas music because it is the one time of year that we get to listen to other genres of music more regularly, right? You hear jazz music, you hear choral, orchestral, and then I get really upset when there's like a pop Christmas tune because it's like, all right, we get this all year round. Like let the orchestra have their moment or let the jazz do their thing. You know, and I realized this because I remember in college, I was in my dorm room and I played one of my favorite Chet Baker tracks for my friend. And she was like, oh, it sounds like Christmas music. And I was like, that's interesting because it didn't sound Christmassy. It was just like I think it was Let's Get Lost by Chet Baker. Not very Christmassy sounding, but to her, as someone who really only listened to jazz during the holidays, it sounded like Christmas music. I hung out with some friends in the park recently and we were playing Frisbee and I am really bad at Frisbee. I have a lot of fear around Frisbee. I feel like it would just hurt more than a ball if you got hit with it, I think, because it's like a disc. I feel like it would just like sort of cut in more than if a ball hit me in the head. And I've been hit in the head with many balls, so I would know. But I haven't been hit by a Frisbee yet, and I don't plan on it. But I faced my fear the other day with some friends, and I played Frisbee. And, you know, I wasn't as bad as I thought. So let that be a lesson to anyone who struggles with fear. Just don't be afraid. Isn't that funny how that's usually the advice? It's like, well, why don't you just try not being afraid? Maybe that'll help. Usually that doesn't work, but for some reason with the Frisbee in that moment, it did. I was like, I'm afraid of Frisbees. And my friend was like, why? And I was like, you're right. I'll play. Today's episode, it was such a fun one. I have comedian Kenise Mobley on the podcast. Kenise and I met doing stand-up. She is just one of my favorite people to talk to. And in this episode, we talk about kindness and how we're both secretly mean, actually, and being raised religious and a lot of other things. I think you're going to really enjoy the episode. Kenise has a podcast, and the second season actually premieres today on December 15th. So if you like Kenise on this episode, which I'm sure you will, go check out her podcast, Love About Town, wherever you get podcasts. You can also follow Kenise on Instagram and Twitter at Kenise Mobley. And if you are enjoying this podcast, as always, please hit that 5-star review rating. I can't talk. Subscribe. You do all the things you probably already did if you're listening, if you're a devoted listener. But if you just stumbled upon this show, you know what to do. Okay. Without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Kenise Mobley. How's it going? How are you doing in all of this?
I'm doing pretty good. I feel lucky because like I've gotten some gigs during this. So I'm like sustaining myself on comedy. And honestly, I wasn't able to do that before. So I don't know what it is, but this has been working out for me. And I feel guilt about that, but also like, oh no, does that mean when everyone is able to do things that they won't want me anymore?
It's like this thing you get in your head, like, I'm only going to succeed when everything's going really badly.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's true. I think it'll probably just continue the success and it'll just get better because the world will be better too.
I hope so, man. I really hope so.
You're referring to your show on Vice. Is there something else too?
Or yeah. So the other thing is kind of weird. So I work for this organization called the Center for Media and Social Impact. And what they do is they pair comedians and comedy writers and improvisers with nonprofits to create content. So I also like sometimes get to create content for nonprofits, especially like when their message aligns with what I believe in. It's pretty amazing.
What kind of content do you make for nonprofits?
So all sorts of stuff. So I just started working for the center, but I have gotten jobs through the center in the past. So like in January and February, I was working with By Us For Us called Bufu. It's a sketch comedy. I guess it's a show. We made 3 episodes of it for Color of Change, the large nonprofit. And then I just did something for Pop Culture Collaborative that's about radical kindness, which is pretty cool. So just like, hey, brainstorm ways to improve kindness in the world. It's like, okay.
Yeah, kindness is really in right now. Have you noticed?
Honestly, I'm of 2 minds about it. One, the person who likes people being kind to me is like, yes, this is good. And then the cynical part of me is like, these people don't mean it. These people are they're jumping on a trend. Da, 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 da. So
totally. And I mean, yeah, it's like people are who they are. But I guess if people are going to like be fake, they might as well be fake kind.
Right?
Right?
I
don't know. But you're someone who is very kind. I love being around you. I haven't actually been around you that much, but whenever you're around, it's always better.
Hell yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. You see, you're just like very comfortable just like being yourself. And that also like makes me feel more comfortable. I don't know.
That's great. Anyway, I was on a podcast yesterday talking about how I'm a mean person. So this is lovely.
Do you have that feeling? Maybe we're similar in this way. Like I think people generally think I'm a nice person. Who knows what people are saying, but I think I come across as like a friendly enough person, but then I always think that I'm like tricking everyone and I'm like so mean in my head. And one day everyone's going to find out.
Yeah. It's going to be, you're much younger than me. And I always have to remember that. So like my pop culture references should be like, but did you ever see, what is it? I just watched it like 3 days ago. Cruel Intentions.
I saw it so long ago. It's not, I don't remember much about it.
Also watching it recently, I was like, Jesus Christ, no wonder our whole generation is fucked up from like a sexual standpoint, like what we expect from people and like harassment and like straight up assault in some cases. And it's like, haha, oh well. And I was like, oh my God, Jesus. But at the end of it, everyone reads his diary. And that's like my deepest fear. That everyone's going to somehow know the deep thoughts I have about people and are like, wow, she was a bitch and we hate her.
But that would be kind of great. Like if you got to the end of your life and everyone's like at your funeral and they've like somehow found your diary and everyone's like, wow, she like really fooled us. Like you got to give her props. She made it her whole life without us finding it out. That would be a success. You know what?
Yeah. I have elaborate plans for my funeral as it is. But that would be a great like little cherry on top. Oh my God. My friends know there's a dance number involved. It's very elaborate. It's over the top. There's musical cues, lighting cues, all that. They've got to do it near a river so they can send my body down on a raft. And then an archer can like set it on fire and everything. But I would love as they watch my body drift away in flames. So they like passed out the thing. And it was like, oh my God, she's terrible. If I'd have known this, I wouldn't have done this elaborate rigmarole. She's bad. Oh.
But that would be like, that would be the best if you like managed to also get everyone to do that as your final thing. Like, haha, gotcha.
Oh, I would love it. I'd love it so much.
Do you have like a, I don't know how spiritual or religious you are or anything. Do you ever think you'd be able to like somehow see your funeral?
I was raised religious and now I'm not religious, which means that there's two people inside my brain. There's like the religious child who's like, yeah, I'll be looking down because of course I'm in heaven, even though I don't do anything particularly heaven worthy. And then the other part is like, you die, there's nothing. And it's okay. And that's the point, that there's nothing and you die.
it's really hard to let go of what you believed as a child,
yeah.
even when you logically know it's not the case. And it makes me realize like why people are so fucked up from their childhood. Cause I'm like, I can't even get over like Santa not being real.
Right.
Like imagine if some real shit happened to me. Like, I don't know. It's
yeah. Wait, were you raised religious?
No, I was, I mean, my mom's Jewish, but you know, the Jews were more culturally Jewish than anything mostly.
That is so. What I have heard. I can neither speak yeah. about that, but I have all of my friends who are Jewish have said it in this way, except one friend who converted to Judaism and now he is a rabbi and that is his whole life. So,
right. There are, so I also have a friend who converted to Judaism and that would be weird to convert to a religion just for the culture. I feel like that could even be seen as like offensive. I don't know.
I don't know.
So if you convert, you like have to become like a rabbi.
Yeah. Those are the rules.
Yeah. Or at least like marry a Jew.
Yes.
Like, oh, you did that so you could marry that. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to speak for all Jews. But, so what religion were you raised?
Well, it was, at first it was like Southern Baptist, I think for like the first couple of years of my life, when I was forming beliefs, but not memories, I guess, which is fucked up that can happen. And then AME, it's African Methodist Episcopalian. So it's like black, not exactly conservative, but like kind of snooty church. That's the type of church I went to. It feels weird to describe what black church is because my ideas of black church are solely formed by what black church was in the 90s. So in the 90s, in my church, every Sunday you have to dress up. Like if you come, like the idea of someone coming to church in jeans is like laughable and borderline offensive. Like slacks at least, dresses at least, heels of course. Hats if you are over the age of 50 or if you are related to the pastor and his whole crew. And it's like, it takes 4 hours every Sunday and you get there probably at like 9:30 because that's when Sunday school starts. And then there's this weird break. And then church starts at 11 and it goes until sometimes 1 if you're lucky, sometimes 3 if they have a lot to talk about. And it's agonizing. It's so painful and long. There's good music though, but oh, you're just like, let me leave. This is too much.
It's like watching someone blow the light to the extreme.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Where you're just like, okay, you could have wrapped this up a long time ago. If you didn't get them by now, you're not gonna get them. Stop it.
I don't know if you feel this way, but when I watch a comedian like blow the light by like 2 minutes, all of a sudden my whole body is like in revolt. I'm like, you gotta get off stage right now. Like,
don't you know the rules?
Yeah. Yeah. But so was there. When you say good music, you mean like the choir?
Yeah, like the choir, church? And there's like a full band. So there's like a guitarist, a drummer. Usually someone from the choir will come and sing with them. And then definitely piano, organ. Like they just like, and that was like an important role within the church. Like if you were the music director, you got a lot of control over things.
I feel like good music in church like really makes it or breaks it. Like I love gospel choirs.
Yeah.
So that's great. And I also love like, you know, early music polyphony. So I love like when I went to like Notre Dame and heard like nuns sing. I don't know where I was, but
that sounds awesome.
You know, I love that. But then I went with my friend once to her church because she was like newly religious. And I was like, I'll go with you. I'll just be a friend and go.
Yeah.
And it was like that like pop, like Christian pop music. And it was just like the worst thing ever.
It's so painful.
It's just like, man, like at least like, I don't know, you get to have such good music.
Yeah.
If you're in church, like, why are you doing this?
Yeah,
like,
if it's not for that.
Jesus was my
God. Oh, God. Oh, I hate it so much. I hate it to the point where like, I will be, my sister is letting me use her car during the pandemic. And so, like, I find myself driving a lot more now. And I change the radio station because I'm going across different areas. And it's so frustrating to hear, like, what you think at first is pop. And you're like, oh, there's something a little bit off about this. Oh, it's Jesus. It's God. They oh, no. Change. It's so frustrating. You're like, you almost got me with your shit music. Damn it.
I know, like, oh, it's not his girlfriend. Okay.
Yeah.
fuck. But were you musical at all? Did you ever get involved in the musical activities?
So I sang in the choir a little bit, but not very long because my mother is, how do we say it? She runs late to everything and they, at a certain point, just don't have patience for that. So they're just like, no, I'm sorry. She can't be a part of the choir if she can't, if she's an hour late to every practice, that's not okay. And then outside of church, I was in like choir in school, but then also I was in the band for 5 years. I didn't like it. I played the clarinet. I was like third chair for most of that. So
I feel like clarinet in band is like the ultimate bummer. It's kind of, it's equivalent to like viola in the orchestra, which I can relate to. But do you feel like, was music like your first creative or performance activity, or were you doing acting?
I will say, yeah, I think that music was. That was the first time, although I didn't feel very creative about it. I felt very much so like, here is sheet music, do the sheet music, don't think of it, like, be able to demonstrate your ability to do this task, and that's it. Like, there wasn't encouragement, or I didn't feel the need to, like, make my own stuff or be creative with it. And now, I think if I had, I might be more interested. I think a couple of years into that, I started doing all like the school plays and stuff. And that was definitely more my speed.
Yeah. It's funny. Music, when you do music, it's usually like band or orchestra. You're not like being creative, but it's marketed almost.
As, oh, yeah.
Like it's the arts. It's you're expressing yourself. And I remember like hearing some kid and some testimony on a PBS show being like, I love playing the trumpet because I get to express myself. And I was like, I don't feel like I'm expressing myself on the viola right now. I'm just like playing the note. I mean, sure, there's like feeling behind it, but it's like, I remember thinking, okay, if I'm angry, I'm not going to like play the piece more angry. I'm going to play the piece how it's supposed to be played.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I ended up, you know, doing music and still play music, obviously, but like, you know, taking it as far as I could go, but still like not feeling creative with mm-hmm. it. And it wasn't until I started doing like comedy and writing that I felt like more creative. Like I was, you know, putting my own voice into something.
That's cool. So wait, how long have you been playing since you were how old?
5.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's so cool.
I mean, there were elements of it I liked, like playing with other people and like that kind of communication. It wasn't all bad,
yeah.
But it just, when you said like, yeah, it didn't feel creative. I was like, yeah, it doesn't in a lot of situations. And like, I wonder if there are ways to like make kids more excited about it.
I wish that, you know, there was. So for us, the assignments were always play this thing, and whoever plays it best according to the sheet music, that's the first chair. Okay, now we're going to play these things. I wish that there was some sort of assignment like, well, now you know all the notes and now you know like some of the principles, make your own music, or like you guys are going to get into small groups and work together to create something where you have input on something. Like that would have been really cool.
Yeah, and kids who do like rock band or jazz band, I feel like they get that a
yes.
little more because there's improvisation, or like with rock band, it's literally like, you know, write your own song.
Yeah.
And I feel kind of like ripped off.
Right?
I'm like, oh, I wish I had like been doing that earlier on. But so when did you, so you said you started doing theater as well, mm-hmm. and that felt more.
That's definitely felt more my speed. I am an attention hog. I am certainly varying levels self-centered, but I acknowledge that I am a self-centered person and it's something I'm trying to work on. But man, oh man, being in front of an audience and being like, you all have to listen to me. I was like, I love this. This is for me.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I think about how simple it is in terms of like, you know, going from like music to comedy, and people are like, yeah, like you wanted to get more in touch with your voice. And I'm like, also like it's stand-up is just me with a microphone getting all the attention. So maybe that's why I like it more. Like, let's be real. Like, you know, so I applaud you on your honesty with that.
Thank you very much.
I wonder, like, because acting also, I mean, I guess the attention thing, but you're also just sort of like memorizing lines, but I guess there's sort of more room for interpretation,
yes.
maybe.
I can, you are a professional musician, so you can like pick apart, like, this is good and this is bad. And these are the varying levels of good that make this person a true master of their craft and this person just decent. I have a very hard time telling that outside of like, technical competence. That's the extent to which I can tell something is good or bad musically. But with acting, I feel like I can understand a much clear gradation between like technically decent and actually good. I'm trying to remember where I was trying to go with that, but that I think is also part of why that interested me more, because I'm like, oh, I can tell like this thing that I did was better than this, and this feels better than this, and therefore I can iterate in a certain way where I don't feel that way about music, or didn't. I haven't done music in a long time.
I think it just depends on like what you're more emotionally connected to, and mm-hmm. you're just watching closer. Like for me, I'm kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, like I do a little acting and through because of comedy, but I actually am always like, is this good acting or not? Like I can't really tell. Like I can tell if it's really bad.
Yeah.
Like you could tell, and like you said, you can tell if like a musician is bad, but you maybe can't tell if someone's like good or great.
Yeah.
On the violin or whatever. And for me, yeah, like I'll be watching a movie with like my actor friend and she's like, oh my God, like this is so bad. And I'm like, I don't know. She was fooling me. Like I kind of think it's all right.
Hell yeah.
But like, what are you, okay, so I want to, like, what are you looking for in a good acting performance? What is it, just like you believe them? What is it?
So, and let me also clarify, like I did theater until eighth grade and then I did debate because that is even closer to comedy where it's like, it's debate, it's humorous interpretation and it's giving funny speeches is mainly what I did. But I still have strong opinions on it. It's like, it's so hard. It is hard. Now that I'm having to articulate it, I think it's hard. When I see acting that I think is bad, it is clear that they're not listening. It's clear that they're like, when it's bad, it's like, oh, you're like saying this in a way. Like, it's almost like when, have you ever, I don't listen to the sound in porn because the acting is very bad, but they're like, I'm saying words that I know. And you're like, no, you're not.
Right.
So it's, yeah, it's like how they're saying it, how they're listening, how, yeah, natural. I don't know. I can just tell a little bit more.
I guess it's like, I mean, it is, it's such a subtle thing with acting because it is just someone like trying to be mm-hmm. a human. There, it's not like, unless you're literally forgetting the lines, it's not like when someone's like missing a note or has like a shitty sound on the instrument. Like you're not going to criticize someone's sound when they're acting, I guess, unless they're not projecting enough and you literally can't hear them. But if you can like hear the words and they know the words, that's like the base of the, I don't know. But wait, side note, do you watch porn with the sound off?
I can't
completely?
Deal with it. I can't deal with the sound.
I need the sound.
For me, it's just, it's so distracting because it's like, I already have issues enough with like certain lighting things and like design choices. I already am thinking about that. I can't also be thinking like, why is there like a fan running in the background? And that sound, they've added this sound in. That's not a sound that like her, that moan, it's simply because her face is turned away from the camera that you've added that. There's nothing motivating that moan. Like I just.
Well, you're a filmmaker, so you're like picking up on things that a lot of people wouldn't be picking up
so
on.
I find it so distracting.
That must be really hard as a filmmaker to get to enjoy porn. Is there a category of porn that's like for filmmakers or like.
I would love that. Okay. I would love it if it was like, because they have like act, it's very act based. And I've had conversations with a lot of people about this. It's very act based. So like you want to see this done to this type of lady. That's how you search. And it's right. Like, oh, okay, cool. Great. Thank you for that. But I wish it was more vibe based. Like these things all have interesting power dynamics and the acts are different, but the power dynamics shift. That's what's fun about this. And they had a category where you could search for that. And these are all really well produced. So they have lighting and they had a production designer. And maybe they have more than just one set. Like, oh man, and you can search based on that. Oh my God, it would make me so happy.
There should be a category of porn called like Oscar worthy.
Yes. I'll write Pornhub right
That's
now.
That's what it should be. I mean, it would cost a lot, but maybe it's like a premium thing.
They don't even make the porn. It's still the production houses that make the porn. They would just have to do a little bit more tagging, boop, 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 and then boom, we got a category.
And you're right. It is vibe-based. Like, I'm not particularly into like a girl giving a blowjob, but I am into like if she's doing it against her will, maybe, or you know, so like, Or like maybe she like kind of wants to do it, but like not really, but she knows that's what he wants and like she really wants his approval. And
where do you search for that? Yeah. I want it where she does it spitefully. Where she's doing it and she's looking at him and he's like, I can tell she's mad at me. Perfect.
Right. Or just like intense eye contact blowjob.
I think you can search for that.
Okay. You can search for almost anything. They like that's why this shouldn't be an issue because there's such advanced categories already. So it's like, okay, folks, let's
It's very silly, but I it is a marker of like my familiarity over time with Pornhub that I know how like based on how they're lined up on a screen, you can tell like, oh, they've added like 8 categories because these things are now no longer right on top of each other. Wow. Oh man, I guess more and more people are interested in this. And now there are so many more categories than there used to be.
Everything is getting like divided up. Like there's so many music categories now too. It's the same thing. I think I was watching the AMAs recent? What was the recent awards show?
There's so many.
My roommate and I like to watch... My roommate and I like to watch these award shows because it makes us feel normal. Like it's like some sense of normalcy just watching, like, you know, even though there's no audience in them and anything. But there was one singer, I forget who it was, and we like looked up what his genre was, and it was like blue-eyed soul. And I was like, what is that? That also sounds like
It does. It's like, do you just mean soul sung by white people? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
It's like, we don't want to put you in the category with the blacks, so we're calling it blue-eyed soul so that suburban house moms know this I can give to my children.
Right. Yeah. It was like, I mean, that's like a whole other problematic issue, that specific category, but I was also like, wow, there's really just like so many categories now. But yeah, blue-eyed soul, like what the fuck is that?
Yeah, I was looking at the Grammy nominations and like I can only look at like 5 categories, but there are like 100 categories and I'm like, I don't know any of these genres. And there's like 5 awards for each genre. And I was like, this is too much.
I was talking about this with a composer recently on the podcast of just like the idea of genre and like how we have this need to categorize everything. I know this came from a talk about porn. So, I mean, not to make this all like a serious critique, but like, you know, we need to contextualize everything. And, but we also like don't want to conform. So as a result, we just keep getting these new genres and eventually we just have to stop and everyone's just got to be them and everyone's just got their Instagram page and their whatever else platforms and we just search what we just find people we like and that's it.
I think that there should be a limit to, how many categories there are. And some categories every year get kicked off and maybe one is added, but it's like, hey, nobody's really watching this type of thing anymore. We got to get rid of it. Like, done. No one is watching car mechanic porn. Get rid of that category. It's over.
Car mechanic porn. I feel like that's probably still a pretty popular one.
I have so much frustration around going to get a car fixed. Like, and them being like, you're like, I know it's my brakes. And they're like, actually, it's both your brakes and your alternator and your spark plug. You know what? Just give us $2,000. And you're like, what? It's like, just give me new brake pads. And so the idea of going there and being turned on by someone who constantly feels like they're kind of trying to flim flam me, I don't like it.
I guess if you're into like someone being really sadistic, you could be into that, you know, like a sadistic car mechanic, like, oh, it's not just one brake, it's both. Oh, and by the way, you're going to need an entire new engine or something.
I think it works if you like the fantasy, like, oh no, I owe a lot of money as a lady. I guess I'll pay for it with sex. Like if that's I feel like that's a fantasy people have. That's why the pizza guy was a thing. Also, that's a category I think we can lose.
No one interacts with the delivery person anymore, for better or for worse. It's why all is contactless he in your house? Now. There's no
like, why have you invited him indoors? Yeah. Wild.
But so you're a filmmaker, you're also a stand-up comedian. Which one kind of came first?
Okay, so what I would like you to imagine is it's a rectangle, right? And on one side is filmmaking and on the other side is comedy. But this is also a representation of time. So at first it's like all of this rectangle is filled with filmmaking. And as comedy starts to be present, filmmaking is dwindling. So right now, in a dwindling, in almost past tense way, I am a filmmaker. But the second I started comedy, I was like, this is the thing that really appeals to me. And I'm going to spend less and less time like writing sketch scripts and like trying to get together with filmmakers in my community to like blah, blah, blah. The amount of coordination necessary to make anything when I can instead just like go to a show and do the show and then that's it. It makes it hard to justify doing the filmmaking.
I know. I think that's why people get really, for lack of a better word, like addicted to stand up when they start doing it, because not only is it so fun when it's good, like obviously getting laughs is like a drug, but also just the simplicity of it. Like you just need a microphone. You can write something that day and then go try it out anywhere, yeah. Like somewhere in the city. And it when it works, you're just like, wow, well, my work is done for the day. Like, it's like a real life tweet,
yes.
You know, because, you know, now we can tweet and get reactions immediately, but it's like doing that, but even better. It's like people liking you in person.
It's so much other, like, because I made like short films and things, and it would be like, okay, I spend a month planning this, and then I spend like 5 days shooting this thing. And then it takes a long time to edit because I'm a shitty editor, or I pay someone to edit it. And then I send it to a few people for notes. I get those notes back, and then I send it out into the world and hope that something happens. Like, that's months of my life for a small project that I'm only losing money on at this point. So it's like, yeah, why am I going to do that to myself and wait that long for real feedback to see if this is a thing that the market wants at all versus, yeah, just walk, say things, write down whether it did well or poorly, and then try it again the next day or later that day. It's so much better.
And the feedback itself is so much clearer. It's not like with filmmaking, you know, there can be so much bullshit. Like, well, I like the tone and yeah. The whatever. And same with music that frustrates me. With comedy, it's like, did they find it funny? Did they laugh?
Did their bodies,
no?
Okay. Almost against their will, create a response? And you're like, yes, the bodies responded. Check.
My work is done.
Yeah.
Yeah, and filmmaking is, so, I mean, I've started doing a little filmmaking, and it's so expensive. Even if you're trying to do it on the cheap, it's still like, you know, you're going to lose some money unless you get a grant or something. But so also the writing is so much pressure because you're like, okay, do I really think this scene in a coffee shop is like worth it?
Because if spend you think $1,000, it's worth it, then you have to pay all these people to come do stuff at this coffee shop and like spend the time to go find a coffee shop that will let you do things there. And yeah.
I walked into so many coffee shops. They were just like, what? You know?
Yeah.
I'm just telling them I had a student project. That
it's New York. I'm shocked that there isn't just like a sign on the wall that they can just point you to be like, these are our rates. This is how often we allow people to do this. You're in New York. Okay. People are shooting here all the time.
I know. And so, but then by nature of the thing being so expensive, and you're just going to be willing to take fewer risks too. So like, it also like hinders you as an artist. Whereas with comedy, like, I'm like, you don't want to mess up in like a high stakes show. But other than that, you're in a back room of a bar. Like, who cares? You can try anything.
Yes. Oh, I love it. It's my favorite thing to just be like, this is a weird thought that I normally would just whisper to a friend at a party and they would laugh. But you know what? I'm going to just say it in front of, you know, or I have a thought about you sitting right there or this environment. And I can just say it and be like, okay, well, part of that was useful. And the rest of it was trash. And I feel a little bad when I like straight up bomb, but like if one new thing doesn't work, I feel fine.
Oh yeah. It's like it has, for me to feel like really bad, more than half the set has to like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm still gonna be like, all right, I need to like get that joke better, but my soul isn't crushed.
Yeah.
Are you like finding that you're really missing performing? Have you kind of adjusted to the new way of life? Temporary, but long lasting.
Yeah. sort of. So like I am doing Zoom shows, and that is like, I'm trying to, what's like a, like, I don't do drugs, so I don't like know good drug metaphors. I'm not like cool, but like
I don't do drugs either.
Yeah, so. I was like those are a cup of coffee, like if I get laughs on a Zoom show, that's like a cup of coffee versus like an actual live show that I imagine that's like cocaine or something. So like, right. Yeah, like it's something, but it's not cocaine. Yeah.
Right. Like it'll like satiate you a little bit.
Yeah.
Partially. Yeah. I feel like for me, I haven't been doing as many Zoom shows lately. I was doing a lot more at the beginning, I think, just cause I was like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And now I've kind of settled into, you know, doing the podcast and like writing, you know, writing scripts and things. Cause it's like, well, it's all going to take a while anyway. So I might as well do this more long-term project. But the Zoom shows, it feels like a bomb kind of, no matter what, mm-hmm. which is kind of productive. Cause it's like good to bomb. It like makes you stronger.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to view it like that. Like, okay, I'm just going to go do like a shitty open mic now.
Yes. I think that's the best way to view it. Although there's some that like, and it's not New York people. It's all these like Boston shows where like they have corporate connections and they still know me. So they're like, yeah, let me book you for this thing that pays. And I just feel bad. Like, look, there's a limit to how well this can go. And I think you guys are expecting this, but you're going to have to accept this.
It's so tough when you're being hired for something and you know that they don't know what they're asking for. I haven't had that as much with the Zoom shows, but even as like a classical musician, sometimes people will hire a string quartet for their, not for their wedding ceremony. That usually works very well, but for their cocktail hour. And I'm like, okay, like unless you have like a good amplification system, which you probably don't, you're not going to hear us. And people are going to just like bump into us holding their drinks and like no one's going to, you have all these like song requests. Like it's going to be just kind of like a humiliating experience for us and you're going to be disappointed. But also you don't want to like tell them not to hire you.
Yeah.
It's like a weird, I don't know.
That sounds terrible. And I have been to weddings where they have a string quartet at the cocktail thing and you're like, I wasn't paying attention at all. Like you're of the dollars you spent here, this was the least like impactful, I guess.
Do you end up feeling sorry for the musicians?
Not, I should, now that you're mentioning it.
No, you shouldn't. Because we are getting paid. True. But like I was curious because in my head, I'm like, they must like feel sorry for us. They must think we're like sad, lame, underappreciated musicians.
No, you know? I'm just like, oh, well, that's your free drinks.
Right, right. Yeah. I've like never asked someone before who's like been to a wedding. I don't know why I haven't asked them before, but that's good to know that you Canise don't feel sorry.
No, I don't. I'm like, I mean, for me, it's like, oh, they paid a lot of money for this wedding. This is a sign that they had a lot of money to spend on this. That's cool.
Yeah. Are you someone, so you said you have lots of plans for your funeral. Are you someone who like has planned their wedding as well, or do you not think about that?
Of course I think about that. I say, of course, I have lots of friends who don't. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm sorry. Were you not raised on rom-coms? Do you not already have firm opinions about like a band versus a DJ? What are you talking about? Right, I know what the food is going to be like. I have different contingencies. Like, and this is said as a person who's never in long-term relationships. So What is this? I don't know, but I do have different contingencies based on like, of course he should get a say. Like I would be marrying a man, unfortunately, and he would be allowed to like pick elements of it, I guess. But it's like, okay, if he wants to get married at the beach, all right, this is how the ceremony, I think the ceremony should go. If he's like religious, I don't think we would be together, but if he like really is attached to a church, this is how I would want it to go. Yeah. So I have like different contingencies based on like where they'd want to get married, but I've thought about all of them.
I think that's more reasonable than having the people who are just like, I know exactly what I want for my wedding and it's my special day and like this is it. Like I like that you're it's like a flexible plan.
Yes.
You know, and they're like certain things. So for me, like I don't know, I may be one of those weird people who hasn't always like planned their wedding. I've always like fantasized about like having a husband or whatever and like a house.
That's much healthier. That's reasonable.
So but
to fantasize about the thing that happens every day versus a one day thing. But I also love planning parties. And this is like, ooh, I get to plan a party that everyone has to come to and has to eat what I want and has to dress to whatever theme I say is the theme.
Would you say you're like an extrovert?
I guess I need a lot of recharge time. I will say that. Like, I need a lot of me alone, recharge, get my thoughts together. But when I am like, oh yeah, I can see people, then I'm like, I'm talking to everybody. Like, yeah.
Maybe my roommate and I were talking about this. I see my roommate a lot, obviously, these days. I feel like I keep bringing her up in podcasts to my roommate and I. But she says she's like an introverted, an extroverted introvert, whereas I'm an introverted extrovert.
Oh.
So like, I don't know exactly what, I feel like I understood that more before I said the words, but that sounds like, you know, there's like a mix of things. Like, you know, you need the recharge time, but like I am like, I feel like an extrovert is affected by those around them, and I'm definitely affected by the energy around me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I need like a ton of recharge time. I burn out really quickly.
Yes.
But I was going to say, just if you love planning parties, like that just seems like something very like extroverted and like you like being around people. I hate planning parties. I hate planning anything like
really?
That. Yeah, it just stresses me out. I don't know.
I guess it's like a type of stress that I enjoy. Like there aren't many types of stress that I enjoy, but like the, we have an event, we have this, okay, you set the stage for this, and this is an experience that we're all going to have together that is also fleeting. Something about that I really enjoy. Like, I've had a birthday party every year since I was 5 years old, and I've been, like, planning all those. I used to also seasonally have, like, a big blowout party in Boston. So every 3 months, it would be a different theme. There would be food that is in line with the theme, like, navigating the space was like thought out in such a way so the furniture would move so that like you could have pockets of conversation while having a general ability to get from point. I love considering all that stuff.
Well, that's like, that's being creative. I mean, it's sort of like the same as being a filmmaker and being a director and you're like planning all these things. It's kind of just like filmmaking, but for life.
Yes. Yes. The same things that I like. So in filmmaking, I really like the roles that I gravitated to in film school were like production design and production, just like logistics generally. I eat that shit up with a spoon. And when it's a party, I don't have to consult anyone else. I don't need to hire anyone else to do stuff for it. I mean, until I get a lot of, if ever I'm very rich, then I will hire people to do things for my parties. But man, oh man, I fucking love it.
I love that you also have your funeral plan too. I think that's just like a nice way to like accept your ultimate death, the impermanence of existence, you know?
We're all going to go sometime. And what? I'm going to make it so like, I don't have a will exactly. Like I have like a Google Doc that's just like, here's some basic things. If I have any money, divide it up to these people, whatever. But my twin sister is also very logistics, like more so than I am. She is like process logistics. And I know if I were to just die, she'd be like, well, what the fuck am I supposed, like, there's no clear instructions here. There's not a model. So I have to like create at least some basic guidelines for the people who I would be dying before. I don't know.
Right. I've thought about that now. I'm like, I mean, I guess I could have died when I was 12 too, but you know, every day I get closer to death, but I don't have like a will or a plan. So at this point, like, it's up to other people to figure it out. I might have said in passing that I like want to be cremated or something. I guess I'm saying it on the podcast for any family members listening. Just cremate me.
Yeah.
But back to the planning your wedding though, one thing is I have figured out certain things I like don't want and want just based on like witnessing a lot of weddings and being like, that doesn't work. This seems like a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Like,
Tell me all of them so I can include that into my plan.
Well, anything outdoors is stressful.
Right.
Because you have to have like a contingency plan. But there's always the pressure to like keep it outdoors, even if it's like kind of shitty weather.
Yeah.
Which just doesn't, and then you have to like put all your guests through being cold and like your musicians and everyone is uncomfortable. So I don't want anyone to be uncomfortable during my wedding. So I kind of think I just want to do it inside no matter what.
Nice.
Maybe there'd be like an outdoor space for the cocktail hour.
Right.
That could be used optionally.
Yeah.
Because you got to get some vitamin D.
Of course.
For the day. But that's one thing. Yeah, like certain music thing. Like I'm like, oh, I definitely don't want like a string quartet at my cocktail hour. It's much more effective to have like a jazz trio that can be amplified like a pianist or a guitar player, whatever. No one's listening to them anyway. Save your money for the band at the party.
So you want a band at the party?
I don't necessarily want a band, but I'm just saying like I actually think I would just want a DJ because like, I want to hear my favorite songs and I just want to hear the originals.
Me too. This sounds very bad, and I recognize that I'm saying this to a musician, but over live music, I prefer recorded music. I prefer hearing exactly what they wanted and how, like, if they could change this and that. I love it. And as a short lady, concerts, like, outside of like classical concerts, jazz concerts now, I'm getting into. It's not because I love the music more. It's because I can sit down and I can see things. Because too often, some 6 foot tall monster will stand right in front of me and I just spin the whole concert like ducking around people. Ugh.
No, I agree. As a performer and as like a classical musician, I guess ideally, I think like the live performance should be like the ultimate experience. However, like I get so much satisfaction from just listening to the same recordings of my favorite music over and over again. And like when I go to a concert, I almost find the visual of the performers on stage distracting from the actual music. So I'm not even having that like full experience, that like sensory thing that I get when I listen to music on my headphones. Which, you know, I don't want to say that because I want like, you know, viva live music. Yeah. Why did I just say that?
I'm so happy that live music exists and I think other people should go to it. And I know that's how a lot of musicians make most of their money because contract deals, whatever. But right. I am not going to go. Until I grow 7 inches taller, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I mean, and also with classical music, there is something to like going to hear a live orchestra in like a hall with really good acoustics, like that, at least for the first 10 minutes until you're like, all right, I got it. Like for the first few minutes, you're just like, oh my goodness. It's like sort of this like spiritual experience. Yeah. It sounds so amazing in a way that you're not used to hearing, this like aural experience. But so yeah, and also you get to sit down. So if you're a short person, it's not. So,
and old. Goodness, I love sitting down. I love it.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to a party where there are no chairs. I don't want to do it.
How do you feel about like watching live comedy?
I like it. How I got into comedy is because I was watching and listening to a lot of comedy. And I will admit, like, I think, so I was older, when I went to my first comedy show. Like, I watched Comedy Central growing up, but I didn't go to a comedy show until I was, like, 26 years old. Like, I just had never been to one. Oh, wow. And I was like, this is cool. And it was, like, in L.A. It was put on maybe tangentially through MTV. My roommate worked at either MTV or Comedy Central. It really doesn't matter. He had tickets to a thing. We went. But it was, like, people that I had heard of from Comedy Central. And I was like losing my mind. And then I listened to all of their records on Spotify. And that's like how I got into comedy. Just like listening to a lot of comedy records, I'm not 80 years old, albums. Jesus Christ. Yeah.
No.
So like, I love watching people do comedy. I love listening to people do comedy. Even when it's not good, I get something out of it.
I grew up like watching a lot of, like, my brother would watch a lot of like George Carlin and Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
Those were like two of his favorites. So I would kind of like watch over his shoulder and be like, that's so cool. And like, I don't know, maybe I was at some like show with my parents once where there was a comedian and thinking like, how are they just talking and people are laughing?
Yeah.
But comedy for me is actually the reverse from music, where like I do think like the live experience adds so much. And I'll even see a comic on TV and be like, I don't know if they're that funny. And then like, then you see them live and you're like, oh, like you had to like be in the room with them.
Yeah.
It's different. And I think it's also because comedy relies on like that interaction with the audience throughout the performance.
Mm-hmm.
It does make a difference to have like, to be surrounded by real people laughing with
you. Oh, I love that. It's like being tickled and like, we're all getting tickled at the same time. And our bodies are like, we don't know what else to do except expel noise really quickly. And it's like, that's so lovely that we all did this together. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could like all like listen to a comedy album with like a bunch of people in the same room and that would be kind of a similar thing.
Yeah.
But also it's just like the person also on stage has such an energy that like does not always come across on the camera. I think it's the same with like politicians sometimes, where you're like, I don't know, they seem like whatever. And then you like somehow hear a politician speak live, and you're like, whoa, oh, they are like that's charismatic why. Okay. As fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like what they're saying necessarily, but like they have the thing.
Yeah.
Do you find that now that you do comedy, you like don't enjoy watching it or listening to it as much, or has it not changed?
It hasn't changed. I still like, I, when people like post on Instagram that they have an album out, I listen to those people's albums and I write them like about their albums. Like, I don't know if some people like that, but I do it because I, yeah, it's like, I listen, I watch all of the Netflix specials that come out, not all of them, because they are releasing a lot now and some of them I just can't, but yeah, I just try, like I try to keep abreast, I try to keep up to date and like what is going, what's coming out and what's going on.
Well, first of all, I think that's like a great thing to do as a comedian. I watch a fair amount of comedy. I'll watch comedy to get myself in the mood to write.
Yeah.
And I have certain comedians who, if they have a new special out, I will watch them because I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I don't think I watch as much as you, but I do think the more comedy you watch, like it's the same as like being a writer. Like you have to read books if you want to be a writer.
Yes.
Like if you want to be a comedian, like you have to watch comedy. And I hear comedians who are like at a higher level say that they like don't watch anymore. And I don't know how I feel about that. I think maybe they should watch more. I don't know.
I agree.
Not only just, if not.
How do I put this in a way that doesn't sound, you know what? I am a judgmental person, so I'm going to say it with the full weight, like the full judginess that I have.
Yeah.
I think that is why a fair number of comedians who've been doing it for like 20, 30 years, their quality in some cases declines because they're not seeing what the trends are, like how people are talking about things, what the expectation is so that they can therefore subvert that expectation. They're not keeping up with that. And so a lot of their stuff sounds stale, sounds like things we've seen on Twitter for the months between when an event happened and when they released a special. Like, yeah, I just think the way to stay relevant is to do that. But also like, how do you find, like, is it just through live comedy that you're finding like people you want to open for you, people who you'd want to hire to write for you? Like, yeah, how are you finding that if you're not looking at what's coming out and who's doing stuff? I don't know.
Right. And even if they're like, well, I'm, you know, an artist and I don't want to just pander. It's like, well, it's not pandering. It's like no one wants an artist who's like never going to grow as a human. And as, you know,
yeah.
You can't just, I mean, maybe some people do. It's like they like the hits and that's it. But you know, mostly you want like an artist, like when they put out a new album, it's like, okay, let's see what they did this time.
Yeah.
Let's see how they like took what's going on. And like, we're like, oh, I want to hear this person's perspective on this new thing, but they're going to have like changed their perspective to like, you know, take in all the new information and insight that we're getting as a culture. And yeah, I know, I totally agree with you. What I was going to say also though, besides it being like good for your art to listen and watch comedy, it's also like just funny because you said you're a mean person. I don't think I can think of a nicer thing to do than to listen to like whoever the hell's album that they posted on and then write to them after. It's like the nicest thing.
I'm thinking like, okay, I'm in talks with a group that puts out albums and it's like, maybe I'll try to put out an album at the end of like 2021 after I've had like a lot of time on stage and have something to say, more to say about like the situation in the world as it stands today. Right. And I can't imagine putting that much work into something and then, well, I mean, outside of filmmaking and then nothing and just like never hearing what people think about it or like, oh my God, that's, oh yeah, yeah. So yeah, just like a quick note to be like, I thought this was really, really funny. And like, especially if they do something that like slightly breaks the form, like sometimes people will have like music things or other intros. I haven't seen anyone do something so crazy that I was like, oh my God, I need to do that. But I love that stuff.
Yeah.
I guess, did you see, Whitmer Thomas did an HBO special and it has like stuff with his family and it has like music stuff. And I was like, that genuinely seems interesting. I don't know him, so I did not write him, but like,
right.
I love seeing like, okay, what are the ways we can update a person with a microphone talking in front of a group of people? Like, I love it.
Yeah, I saw Whitmer Thomas' special. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
And like, why not do that? If you have other abilities or ways to weave things in, I mean, I don't know. There's something about just someone talking into a microphone and like the pure thing of that. Of course, like when it's done well,
yeah,
it's incredible. But also like, we have so many people doing that. So if you can change it, you know.
Yeah.
I'm feeling that a little with like bringing my viola into stand up here and there that I've started doing. And it's like, I don't know, why not?
Yeah.
I used to be afraid to know, oh, it's like hacky or it's not real comedy, but it's like, I don't know. What is real comedy?
What is real comedy? This is very silly. And this has to be when I was like 2 years into comedy. I was at the Boston Comedy Festival and a comedian was like throwing books at the audience. And it was like completely over the top. And at first I was like, what the fuck is this idiot doing? And then I was like, oh no, he's like getting them. Oh shit, this is funny. Like, I love that feeling where I'm like, this is, wait, what? Okay, yeah.
You like being won over.
I love being won over. I I eat it up with a spoon. And sometimes hacky shit, not hacky shit, but shit that we often refer to as hacky, like guitar people, some light prop work. Never ventriloquism, though. I've never found that interesting. But everything else, yes.
I'm a prop light comic.
Yes. I would love it. Just like a quick thing, and you're like, you planned this. That's nice. I love it.
I get sometimes I get mad when I get won over. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I really don't want to like this, but I think I'm a little more negative in that area, but I think it's good to be positive in that way. You seem like a very positive person. Do you feel that way inside as well?
My whole life, I have been, half of my brain is taken up with pure imagining potential outcomes. So it's like the best outcome that could ever exist in the world is part of my imagination. And the worst outcome that could exist in the world is part of my imagination. So part of me is like, yay, it's not the worst part. But a large part of me is also like, I can visualize what the best thing in the world would be. And that isn't the case. Well, that's not good. Like, right. Yeah. So kind of, but also like, oh man, the crippling weight of being measured against a fantasy version of my life. That's exhausting.
Right. I think the fantasy, I'm a big fantasizer. I think that can like both carry you because you're like, well, it could be that way at some point. So why not keep going?
Yeah.
But also like day to day, you're like, but it's not. So meh.
Yeah. Like, oh man, if I win the lottery, I have contingencies. But why do I do that? Why do I fantasize about the type of bath that I own if I win specifically $40 million, but not $200 million, but not $4 million? Why do I know that? That's dumb.
Is the lottery something you think about winning?
I think about winning the lottery all the time.
That's so...
I don't buy lottery tickets.
You don't even buy lottery tickets. That's great.
That's dumb. But it is this thing, like, if I suddenly had access... then what would I do with it? Because I guess I feel rather without it at the moment. So I think, oh, but one day maybe I will, which is the problem with Americans. We all think that maybe one day we will. But
yes,
yeah.
I think in a way it's positive to have fantasies. It can also, you know, take away from like living in the moment and being okay with it, which I think is one of like the positives of like this big everything shutting down and during the pandemic is like learning to, like, I, you know, stand up is my favorite thing and I can't do it now. So now I'm like actually having to find ways to be happy without it, which is good. Cause you have to just exist, you know, anything, you can lose anything at any time. So as long as you can like be cool with yourself, but then, yeah, I think to have fantasies, you need to have like a certain amount of hope, even if the fantasies are like great, like wild and would probably not happen.
Yeah.
Not to say that you won't win the lottery one day.
I won't, because statistically people don't. Or else it wouldn't work. If statistically you were likely to win, it would be like $4 and it cost $5 like that.
Right. People who win the lottery, though, they often like go into financial ruin. Isn't that like, have you...
The studies that I have seen, yes, I've looked into this way too much, but the studies that I've seen show that people will ultimately maintain the level that they are at. So like if a rich person wins the lottery, they're going to stay rich because of the practices and like how they choose to spend it and the counsel that they're able to get and that sort of thing. And their expectations for like how money works and everything. If a poor person wins lottery, I think it is likely that without knowledge of like how to spend, how to save, what is a good investment and what isn't, they often end up going right back to being poor.
No matter what, the system is rigged. You could even win the lottery. Yes. And you, I never thought about it quite in that way. But yeah, if you're a rich person and you win the lottery, you're going to get richer. Yeah.
Like, good, I think J-Lo's, I don't know, was it J-Lo's mom? I was like, my mom watches E! Entertainment News. And
oh, great. Yeah.
So when I go home, like, that's the thing that's on. And they were talking about how, like, I think it's Jennifer Lopez's mom won, like, a lottery or something of, like, 1.4 or like $14 million. And it's like, yeah, she's gonna be fine. Like, it's, she's not gonna like use all that and then be poor all of a sudden. She's gonna be like, oh well, I talked to my daughter's financial advisor and I've diversified this portfolio of stocks and now I have real estate holdings and I'm making passive income on this while doing this, that, and the third. Like, yeah,
right. And why was the real question is, why did J-Lo's mom buy a lottery?
Yeah.
You know, what was she, people's behaviors are, I don't think people actually necessarily, it's not about money.
Uh-uh.
Like, it is, obviously, it's all about money.
It's the fun of winning.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
That's
it's
what
like
it
gambling.
Is.
Gambling. Yeah. My mom buys lottery tickets for us on Christmas. Like, it's a silly thing that, like, when North Carolina got the lottery, she was like, okay, I'll put money into children's education. And so in our stockings, every Christmas is like lottery tickets.
That's like a great stocking stuffer though.
Yeah. It's like $3 here. Boom, boom, boom. And then we all sit together and we scratch and then we're all like, oh, well, we didn't win anything, but it's a fun time.
I don't know if you feel this way, but like whenever I do a scratch off and I don't win, which is every time, I am genuinely like disappointed. Like, oh man, like I don't know why I thought that I should be the one, but that's what, like you said, that's sort of like the American way, like the American dream. Maybe it could be better. Like, yeah. Why not me? And I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know whose quote this is. And someone should, it's my favorite quote about Americans, but it's like, Americans will never fully accept socialism because to Americans, they're not poor. They're just temporarily embarrassed millionaires or like temporarily dispossessed millionaires, something like that, to where like all of us are like, yeah, I could probably be very, very wealthy. And that's why we, based on that sliver of chance, we're like, oh, I'm not going to adopt systems that could actually help me and everyone who's actually at my financial level, because one day I could be at a much higher financial level.
Right. We're all just not rich yet.
Yes.
I think that's similar to like how people like avoid wanting to improve themselves, like go to therapy and like face issues. It's sort of like, well, I don't want to actually get better.
Yeah.
I just want to, I don't know, like, I don't know what I'm saying, but it reminded me of that feeling.
Yeah.
It's like a more micro version of it. And like the internal struggle. I don't know. Does that make sense?
I want to discuss it more because I don't think I totally understand. But so wait, the way my head automatically went is like, there are some things that I recognize that I've been like putting off until either the right man is in the picture or I'm somehow in this like financially more stable position. And I've been putting things off until this fantastical future exists when I should just be doing it now. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Kind of. I think it's just this general fear of success.
Mm-hmm.
And we fear like just being okay. Like we gravitate towards dysfunctional people or we self-sabotage a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Because for whatever reason, we're actually afraid of succeeding because maybe that bears more responsibility or something.
Yeah. And or maybe it won't be the magic thing that you think it will be.
Right. Like it's sort of fun to be like, I'm going to be rich one day. Whereas if we just lived in a world where like you wouldn't need to be rich because your quality of life is like pretty good.
Yeah.
Then you lose that buzz and like what is left and we're afraid of that. So I think that's what I was comparing it to, like sort of just that. Yeah. We're losing that fantasy that's like fun to have
because yeah.
It feels kind of like a drug. I don't know.
I think that's accurate. I think that's accurate to more than just how we do or don't vote for policies that are within our interests. I think that's accurate for dating. I think that's accurate for living. I think that's accurate across the board.
But do you have any, sometimes I ask this of guests, do you have any parting words of wisdom for anyone during these times as someone who seems to be thriving?
Oh, I will say, A, cut yourself some slack, but recognize that discipline also helps. I don't like, I have such a hard time with just basic discipline things because, like a giant child, my day just kind of expands and, like, you know, maybe I could do something with it. Maybe I could, like, I would, I don't. And then suddenly I've gone several days without really doing much. So like cut myself slack for not being perfect is like a big thing that I'm trying to figure out how to do while still being like, there is a benefit to dedication and discipline. Just also recognize that. So that's not useful to anyone except me. And I'm telling it to me.
I think that's very useful. It's kind of just like the unsexy truth, you know?
Yeah.
Because you have to like cut yourself slack, which is like not fun. You want to like be like, be better, me.
Yeah.
But then also you have to work hard.
Yeah. What? That's not what they showed me on TV.
Right. It's supposed to just like be this like struggle, but then things work out.
Yeah.
I know. So. Gradual progress is not very sellable.
It isn't. It works, but it's like, you're telling me that instead of losing 5 pounds in a week with this really fast thing that doesn't actually work, but I could think that it works and feel like I'm doing something. You're telling me that if I just make this like couple of small changes, I could lose 5 pounds in 2 months? I don't know. No deal.
I know, you're like, what? I might as well just stay doing what I'm doing.
Exactly.
Why would I? That doesn't seem worth it at all.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Kanice, it's been such a pleasure having you.
I love talking to you. You're great.
Oh, you're great. Stop it. No, okay. You. Okay. We'll talk soon. Thank you for listening. For more, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter, both at @IsabelHagen_, and sign up for my mailing list at isabelhagen.com. And as always, please rate and review the podcast. Thank you so much and take care.